Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening and welcome to the Veterans News Hour for December the 11th, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David, and good evening, everybody out there. Hope everybody's staying warm. It's pretty cold across the country. Tonight we have two segments to our show. First, we will review VA developments over the past year. It's been a busy, busy year up there in Washington, D.C., so we want to refresh everybody's recollection as to what's taken place, the good stuff, the bad stuff, the stuff we've been criticizing about, so we'll address that this evening. Second, we'll take a look ahead at issues still facing the VA and what's being done about them. Our previously scheduled guest for tonight was Mr. Mike Partain, who is battling the flu. Mike, if you're listening, I hope you're feeling better. We had to reschedule him, so hopefully he'll be on our show next week to discuss the Camp Lejeune contaminated drinking water issue and his group, which is called The Few, The Proud, The Forgotten. But first, I'm going to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And let me remind our veterans that this is the Veterans News Hour. This is your show. We're just the messengers for you all vets. And so anything you want to share with your fellow vets, or you want to tell us about what's going on in your world, whether you're dealing with the VA or you got a problem there, give us a ring. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Yes, Richard, and as you said, in the first segment of tonight's show, we're going to talk about things that have happened so far this year, 2017, in Congress. And believe it or not, as divided as Congress seems to be and deadlocked on so many big issues, it's been very interesting, at least from my perspective, that on both the House and the Senate side, veterans legislation seems to have bipartisan support, and in some situations, unanimous bipartisan support. Perhaps it's because, either right or wrong, veterans issues have become almost kind of a third rail in politics, kind of like messing with Social Security. Politicians just don't want to do it. A lot of them, in my view, probably don't take the time or don't have the time to become very knowledgeable, so they kind of follow the crowd, whoever is identified as a veterans issue leader in Congress, pretty much steers things through, and that you can trace back to the two committees, the Veteran Committee in the House and the Veteran Committee in the Senate. But so far this year, 2017, there have been, by my count, and according to the House Veterans Committee, 10 pieces of legislation that has passed both the House and the Senate and been signed by President Trump into law. There's an 11th one which has passed both houses and which is probably due to be signed by President Trump literally any day now. We'll talk about each one of these. From my perspective, of these 10 that have been enacted into law, most of them have some substance to them. A couple of them have been basically commemorative type of bills, and we'll talk about those as well. But we're going to talk about the substance of these. And then in our second segment of the show tonight, we're going to look ahead to some of the issues that this legislation has tried to address, but will continue to need further attention in the next year and actually the next several years, most likely. But let me start by talking about some of the laws, and then I'll turn it over to Richard Hurley, and he'll talk about more of them as well. Of the 10 that have passed, one is fairly recent, is called the Veteran Apprenticeship and Labor Opportunity Reform Act. And, you know, people in Congress, they like to title these laws so that the title spells out some acronym that people can remember it by. Well, this law is called the Valor Act. And again, it stands, Valor stands for Veteran Apprenticeship and labor opportunity reform act. Now, you know, historically, going back to after World War II, one of the major veteran benefits has been education. You know, so that when the veterans leave military service and they're transitioning back into civilian life, they get the proper training or education they need to make a successful transition, and so they don't become, unable to support themselves or families, become homeless. We do see some of those problems. But that's kind of the social idea behind it. This particular law, the Valor Act, which was signed by President Trump just a few weeks ago on November 21st, 2017, is designed to kind of cut through some of the bureaucracy about veteran apprenticeship programs. Here's the background of the law. The post-9/11 GI Bill authorized a number of on-the-job training and apprenticeship programs, which are designed to expand veterans' career opportunities for those veterans that really aren't interested in going to your typical two-year or four-year college. They want technical training in some field, and this particular post-9/11 legislation had an approval process for these apprenticeship programs. Well, as it turned out, that companies getting the approval discovered that it was very, very difficult, that every state that these private employers wanted to have an apprenticeship program in required separate registration, separate approval by some state approval authority. Well, that's a long process, as you can imagine, particularly for nationwide companies that are trying to implement this in multiple states. So members of Congress responded to the complaints about those bureaucratic obstacles, and they passed, and President Trump signed into law on November 21st of this year, this Valor Act. And the intent is to simplify this approval process for these apprenticeship programs to allow companies to register their apprenticeship program with one central approval agency, which will approve it, make sure it meets the requirements, that it's actually going to help veterans get meaningful employment in the future. It'll streamline the program by eliminating mandatory second signature requirement, which was part of the current process that required or led to unnecessary delays. And with the unnecessary delays, we're then affecting veterans not able to participate. So it's a significant piece of legislation, not the sort of legislation that gets, you know, front page coverage in your newspaper by any means, but it is an important thing that the behind the scenes will help veterans, help their education, and also have the effect of helping them become trained for jobs that do not require your typical 2 or 4 year college degree. So we'll see how that works out. And I say the intent is to sort of streamline the process, and by doing that, by making the process simpler, hopefully will encourage more companies or more diverse range of companies to allow these apprenticeships for veterans, to ensure that the veteran population is represented in a wide range, wide variety of industries. So we'll see how this law, which was just recently signed into law, we'll see how it helps the veterans. Hopefully it will. Over to you, Richard.
Thanks, David, and that's good legislation, and hopefully it's going to help assist our vets to get them back into the workforce. Another bill, the Department of Veteran Affairs Expiring Authorities Act of 2017, was introduced by Brian Mast of Florida, Representative Brian Mast of Florida, and which was signed into law by Trump on September 29, 2017. This extends a number of expiring authorities impacting veterans' benefits, health care, homeless programs, including nursing home care, support services for caregivers, transportation, child care assistance, adaptive sports programs, and housing and home loan services, which is obviously very needed for our veterans. And that was super that Representative Mast got that going and got it signed into law. What was probably the most incredible thing about that, considering the juggernaut that we have up there in up in D.C., was how amazingly fast this passed. And David, you were talking earlier about the bipartisan support for veterans' issues and our vets themselves. In this case, the bill was introduced on September 25th, 2017. It passed the House the same day, then went to the Senate in its identical form, never changed. 2 days later, it was signed in, by President Trump on September 29th, 2017. Quick action. I don't know if anybody up there really read it, but they realized this is something that needed to get passed, and thank goodness that they, in fact, acted quickly. So there you go, David. Bipartisan, unanimous support, and they got the job done. What else do you have for us?
Well, the third of the 10 laws that have been enacted that directly affect veterans this year has been a very significant one. It was numbered H.R. 3218, but it's known as the Veterans Educational Assistance Act of 2017. It was named after Harry W. Comrie, and it's a very, very significant kind of landmark piece of legislation affecting veteran educational benefits, or the GI Bill, as it's sometimes called. It was introduced by Congressman Phil Rowe, who's the chairman of the House Veteran Affairs Committee. And one of the most significant elements of this, it's now a law, is to remove the time restrictions for veterans to use the GI Bill, enabling future eligible recipients to use their GI benefits anytime during their entire life, as opposed to the current 15-year timeline. It also simplifies the benefit for future service members by consolidating the GI Bill into a single program over time, which would reduce the VA's administrative cost. It does have some other positive elements. I know, Richard, you've done some research on this, so if you tell us about that.
Yes, David. In addition to what you just explained, this legislation provides significant increases in GI Bill funding for our reservists and guardsmen, dependents, surviving spouses, and surviving dependents. It also provides 100% GI Bill eligibility to post 9/11 Purple Heart recipients. This bill restores eligibility for service members whose school closes in the middle of the semester and creates a pilot program that would pay for veterans to take certain high technology courses. But as David said, most importantly, for the first time in the history of the GI Bill, new service members will be able to use the benefit throughout their lifetime. So kudos to our congressman up there in D.C.
Yeah, again, that's another example of overwhelmingly bipartisan support in both houses of Congress for that legislation. And again, it's pretty significant law expanding the GI Bill educational benefits. So, Richard, I understand that of these 10 laws we're talking about tonight, some of them were perhaps less substantive in nature and more of like commemorative.
That's correct, David. We have the H.R. 2519 is the American Legion 100th Anniversary Commemorative Coin Act. Well, the American Legion is 100th Anniversary Commemorative Coin Act introduced by Chairman Rowe and Ranking Member Waltz, was signed into law by President Trump on October the 6th, 2017. Authorizing the Department of Treasury to mint and issue commemorative coins in recognition and celebration of the 100th anniversary of the American Legion. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the American Legion, it was chartered and incorporated by Congress in 1919 as a veteran service organization. It is the nation's largest wartime veterans service organization, committed to mentoring youth and sponsorship of wholesome programs in our communities, advocating patriotism and honor, promoting strong national security, and continued devotion to our fellow service members and veterans. Overall, 144 commemorative coins have been minted since 1892. So that's a little history for our listening audience. What else there, David?
Well, yeah, the American Legion has done a lot of great things over the last 100 years for veterans. As veterans know, they've got American Legion posts all over the country. And those posts perform a number of positive things. They serve as a social gathering place for veterans but most of them also participate in many positive programs to help their local communities. They also represent veterans. They help veterans that that are in need. They represent veterans in dealing with the VA. So American Legion, one of the most famous veteran service organizations, and I think that was the thinking behind Congress passing this law to authorize a commemorative coin for 100 years of really outstanding service by the American Legion to veterans, but also in turn to our country. Now, another important law that was passed by Congress overwhelmingly and signed by the president in August is a law that we've talked about on many, many shows since early this year, and it's called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. This truly is a significant milestone in veterans laws. The law is governing veteran disability claims and appeals. This law has really been in the works for a number of years in various forms where the VA, various veteran groups were kicking around ideas on how to fix a program, the disability claim system and appeal system, that has had many, many problems. It's extremely complex, and unfortunately, once a veteran gets into the appeal channels for disability claim, will often face years and years of waiting at each of multiple steps. So the idea behind this law was finally Congress got together, overwhelming bipartisan support, for better or worse, to enact this law, and President Trump signed it in August. Again, it's called the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. The idea is to modernize the appeal process at the VA. As I say, we've discussed this on many prior shows. The great thing here on BBS Radio is you can listen to our prior archived shows at your leisure. They're all recorded, and you can go back and look through our shows, the headings, and many of them will talk about VA reform. And this particular piece of legislation, Richard and I tracked this as it was working its way through committees earlier this year, being passed by both houses of Congress, and then being signed into law. And if we have more time this evening, we'll talk more about the process now that's underway to actually implement this law. But my perception...
We've even had some guests on the show who were very familiar with it.
Yes.
To often offer their comment and professional opinion about it. And by and large, it's not too complimentary, but we'll see, you know. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think the question is going to be whether or not this law will actually improve the claims and appeal system, or whether it will merely replace the current flaws in the very slow current system with another flawed and slow system. I think the latter is really my concern. And Richard, as you said, we had Mr. John Wells, who's the executive director of Military Veterans Advocacy Group, on our show. We had him on a couple times this year, just in November, but also back in May, to discuss this legislation. He's been actively involved, including lobbying members of Congress about this and dealing with the VA. So his interviews are very insightful on this. We've also had other perspectives from the National Veterans Legal Services Program, the Director of Litigation, Amy Odom, on our show a couple times this year. So our listeners may find it interesting to go back and listen to those archived podcasts of those interviews to find out more about the details of this law. But as I say, it's a major, major piece of legislation. It's the sort of thing that Congress only does, you know, every 20 years or even longer. So that's what's kind of scary about this. If this law turns out to be a dud, how long is it going to take Congress to realize that, and then how much longer will it take for Congress to do something of this significant, try to improve it? On the positive note, though, we have to give members of Congress credit for at least making an effort to tackle this issue, and hopefully their good intentions will pay off. Now, let me talk about another bill before I turn it back over to Richard. Another of the veterans-related legislation this year was called H.R. 1545. That was the House resolution number. and it's called the VA Prescription Data Accountability Act. As you know, it's a big issue in today's world about those in the medical field tracking the prescription of controlled substances. We've got a big problem with drug overdose, opiates, et cetera. And this particular law called the VA Prescription Data Accountability Act was introduced by Representative Annie Custer, would clarify existing law to require that the VA will disclose information to state controlled substance monitoring programs for anyone, whether a veteran or a non-veteran, who's prescribed these controlled substances through the VA. This law was signed into law on November 21st, 2017, by President Trump, and its intent is to help prevent the misuse and diversion of prescription medications. And we've had a few clients who have run into obstacles with the VA, who believe the VA falsely accused them of doctor shopping for their painkillers. But that's really a reflection of kind of increased attention to this issue, and the VA is playing their role, playing a role in that issue. So over to you, Richard.
Yeah, David, before I go on, I have been getting I don't know if Doug can hear me, but I've gotten a couple of text messages. We've got some people waiting online to call in.
Yeah, go Doug? Ahead, Richard. I understand we have a caller on line 3.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, Rebecca. Rebecca, how are you tonight?
Hey, I'm good. I'm trying to remember that I'm actually in Florida.
Yeah, right?
It's chilly right now.
A little chilly up there in Crestview.
31 degrees this morning. So, I wanted to ask about something that being married to a prior security forces troop and then someone whose spouse is still active in law enforcement and several family members, kind of concerned if anything is being looked at now in the face of Hawaii's police chief issuing letters to individuals who have registered medical marijuana cards, now saying that they have 30 days to turn in their registered weapons or transfer, you know, ownership to somebody else. It's kind of concerning to me because it's just, to me, it seems like we're adding another stigma to our veterans. So you went to war, you came back, now you have some PTSD. We found something that can help you potentially better than 34 pills a day. But as soon as you get that card that's now legal in your state, you now lose your right to bear arms. So you lose your Second Amendment right because you want to try and get back a quality of life that you should have all the time anyway. You shouldn't have to choose. And my husband was just reading yesterday, I believe it was, that he said it appeared as if Ohio was potentially leaning that direction. To me, that's very troublesome that we are now telling veterans potentially that they lose their Second Amendment rights if they choose an alternative health regimen.
Richard, you want to address that first? Because then I have some thoughts, too.
Go ahead, David.
Okay. Well, Rebecca, thanks for bringing that really important issue to our listeners' attention. It is a big issue, and more states have enacted into law or considering enacting into law the medical marijuana, the cannabis, and even before that, you know, many veterans were self-medicating or have been self-medicating with that. I can't predict exactly how this is going to work out, but I would have to say, just from my perspective here in Florida, given the big publicity and the pretty significant support for medical marijuana by a large segment of the population, aside from the veteran population, that my thought is that it's not going to go too far and being used to curtail people's Second Amendment rights. Now, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I kind of doubt it. I think that the more attention that is given to this issue, that people will speak up. And we have seen situations in the past where, a loud vocal response by veterans has been heard by lawmakers. Another somewhat related issue that we've seen come up in recent years has been it's kind of a related issue. It's veterans that may have post-traumatic stress disorder, and of course, someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, they may be severely debilitated by that, or they may be maybe less so. I mean, it's kind of a spectrum of severity. But we've had some clients and heard of others, veterans, where their compensation and pension examiner has opined that their PTSD is so severe that they're unable to manage their own funds, which is understandable, but that doesn't necessarily mean also that just because they're unable to manage their funds that they are a threat to themselves or others as with respect to firearms. But nevertheless, that simple checking the block that they're unable to manage their funds has triggered a response from the government, from the VA, that that they have to then justify that they're still able to handle weapons. I know this is a touchy subject with all the gun violence in the country, but it really is another one of the issues, and to some extent it's related to the medical marijuana, which is veterans that are suffering from post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, other service-related psychological disabilities. You know, the question is, what should be the legal ramifications? Should the fact that they lawfully use medical marijuana, why should that affect their Second Amendment right to bear arms and defend themselves and their families? That might be an easier answer for some to answer than for a situation where the post-traumatic stress is so severe that it's perceived to creating a threat to the veteran or to others, to their safety, and you know, trigger some sort of firearms restriction there. So
I agree. I guess what concerns me so much is having lost a son to PTSD. It just seems to me that we're putting veterans in a position of having to choose or having to stay hidden, you know, about the PTSD and what they're trying to deal with because they have to choose. So I can either try and get better or I could possibly lose my right to carry a firearm, which is ironic because in the event that it became, you know, widely legal, I don't really know if law enforcement would ever be able to use it, but that would be like telling somebody in law enforcement, you can carry your weapon on duty, but if you have this card, you can't own personal firearms. So,
right.
I mean, when you have a general on active duty that comes out so courageously, and says, I struggle with PTSD, I'm struggling right now with PTSD. Yeah, he can't use medical marijuana while he's active duty, but say in 2 or 3 years he retires and doesn't go back into federal service and he just has a regular job and he goes and gets the card because he's allowed to. We're going to tell a general, you are now no longer right. You have no rights to carry a weapon.
Right.
It just really scares me that we may be forcing veterans again into a realm of, I can't talk about what's wrong with me because if I do, I'm going to lose something else. Before,
right.
It might have been my career. Now I could lose my Second Amendment rights. To me, it's just, it is a frightening path.
Right. And I think another thing, part of that, which is the concern that the VA is, the VA does a lot of good things. I think most veterans would acknowledge that, but they also fall short in many areas. They have a significant shortage of psychologists and psychiatrists. They have a high turnover among those career fields, and that's point number one. Point number two is they also have a reputation, you know, that they push the psychiatric medications a little too quickly instead of other therapies for post-traumatic stress, depression, and anxiety. And any one veteran might say, I'm oversimplifying it, but there are a lot of veterans out there that we've heard from that would basically support what I've just said. So the point being, here's the VA, which has its own problems in providing proper psychiatric care, and now veterans in states that allow, you know, medical marijuana, it's providing some veterans, in their view, a safer choice than some of the psychiatric medication that they feel they're almost guinea pigs for, you know. So it's, I appreciate you bringing that issue, and my condolences to you, Rebecca, for the loss of your son.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your experience and your insight on that. Richard, what would you like to share?
You know, another thing on that same topic that we run into all the time is when veterans who are suffering from PTSD and they're getting counseling or assistance at the VA, and they have a psychiatrist or a psychologist for 3, 4, 5, or 6 months, and then all of a sudden they show up again, and now they have somebody new. And, you know, the veteran turns to this person and says, well, where's Mr. or Mrs. Smith? They say, well, you no longer have that person. You now have me. And this veteran has just unloaded all his personal stuff on this other person for 6 months, and now there's this totally new person there. And they feel they have to start all over again. And not only starting all over again on getting used to that psychologist, but then they're told, well, we're going to change your meds on you now too. We're going to do something else. We're going to prescribe something else. And the veterans have told me that they say, well, why? And the response is, well, I prefer to use something else. And the veteran says, yeah, but it was working what I was using. Well, that's not what I'm going to now prescribe for you. You know, and this doesn't happen once or twice. This happens a lot. And, you know, the veterans that I deal with are very concerned. You know, they don't like it. And a lot of them turn around and say they're not going back. Well, that's not the answer either. So, you know, what's going on over at the VA when it comes to treating our men and women who are suffering from PTSD and other mental and emotional ailments, in my opinion, isn't that good. There's just too much inconsistency. And I think when you're dealing with someone who's struggling with mental and emotional issues, consistency is extremely important. So I don't know, Rebecca, if you run into that with, maybe with your son. If
you had
any of those issues.
Every appointment, it was, let's try, you know, another medication, which put him through 2 weeks of extreme issues with his stomach, and then he couldn't work, so he wasn't getting paid. So it was a constant, do I take the meds and hope they work, and then I get sick? When they went into his apartment, this 25-year-old man had 3-gallon-sized Ziploc bags full of meds. My brother-in-law is 100% disabled and takes nearly 30 pills a day, and he's 45, 44 years old, a day. And every time they go in, it's exactly like what you said. If they don't see the same person, it's every kind of physician or psychiatrist as the med manager, they have their own favorite, so to speak. And it's not even just making some of them sick. One of the last medications that Drew was on, he took it for like 4 days. 4 days. And he said, Mom, I don't feel right. There's something, I don't feel right taking this drug. And I literally said, you've taken it for 4 days. Stop, and we'll go back in. And he didn't go back in. He was gone within 2 weeks. So it's not even just causing them small physical problems. It's causing life-changing problems. and that's not okay.
I think it's important that that we all be kind of the voice for those veterans, and that's one of the purposes of this show is to exchange information, exchange ideas. And this is a really important one because it affects tens of thousands of veterans, if not hundreds of thousands of veterans, just from the Iraq and Afghanistan war that are coming back with these issues. So. Well, Rebecca, thanks so much for calling in tonight and sharing everything that you've said, and wish you all the best.
And Merry Christmas, Rebecca,
to
you and your family.
Yeah. Take care.
Merry Christmas. Hopefully it'll be a little warmer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, I think we have, Doug, do we still have the caller on line 4?
Doug?
Hello, yes, let's take Michael on line 4. Michael, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, how are you tonight? This is David, and Richard Hurley is with us.
Hey, Michael, how are you tonight?
Hey, David. Hey, Richard. Doing pretty good. How are you doing this evening?
Great, thank you.
Pretty good.
Thank
you. A little cold, but pretty good.
Yeah, it's going to start getting that way for everybody.
Yeah. What would you like to share with us tonight, Michael?
I was going to call in first of all, and thanks for the and thank you guys for your help with my claim. I received my 100% rating, permanent and total rating, Friday, as a matter of fact. I didn't get anything in the mail. We saw it online. It was very excited to be calling Rick that morning to let him know. but it came through.
I feel very happy for you. Thank you.
It came at the right time. We've been flat broke. We've had to file for disability. We've had to file for bankruptcy, and we had our house foreclosed on, waiting for all this to go on. But and this year, Christmas, we weren't going to be able to do it. And man, right here at the last minute, we got the phone call and the money got deposited Friday, and Christmas just started looking a whole lot better for us.
Well, that's a wonderful blessing, and what people need to understand too is the long, terrible way that the VA puts you through to get what you rightfully deserved, and that's really a travesty. And we're continuing to try to sound the word that the system needs to be fixed. We talked earlier about legislation which supposedly will do that. We'll see if it does.
Hey, Michael, let me. I know you've got some issues still with your transplant that we were talking about earlier this evening.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you share some of that with us? Because I know you got some things going on up there in Alabama.
Yes, sir. We've I've got, first of all, my disclaimer on this is I've got some great doctors at RVA. I really do. My pulmonologist is great, and they're doing everything they can to help me. But my last appointment, I developed the lung conditions that have got me where I am, needing the transplant. Right now, I'm functioning with 35% lung capacity in my right lung, and I think right at 45% in my left. I'd also developed tracheobronchial malacia, which is basically where the muscles of my trachea and my bronchi have weakened and lost a lot of their musculature due to the toxic exposures that I had going on. So all that being said, the VA, when they sent the transplant stuff off to Wisconsin, came back and they said that my numbers warranted it, but in the VA healthcare system, tracheobronchial malacia is a contraindication to a lung transplant because my survivability would be decreased. My pulmonologist at the VA told me that that the UAB, which is the facility across the street from the VA, and keep in mind that the VA doctors there are like a lot of other VAs that are next to a learning facility. They are all UAB doctors anyway. And so I got referred over to another UAB doctor, and they said they could fix the tracheobronchial malacia and actually be able to get the lung transplant at the same time. When we went to try to submit it to the Veterans Choice Program, they denied it. And we we finally got an answer why after the third time, and they're saying that they're not part of the Veterans Choice Program. And to boot that, that UAB facility is the one that they send me to whenever they can't do the test there. And I've had two surgeries done over there because the VA couldn't do it, so we get sent over there to get the surgery done. But since they don't have a Veterans Choice contract, they're refusing to pay for everything. Now, everything's service-connected. Everything's rated the right way. Everything went through. My doctors have been sending in letter after letter requesting that they pay for what we've had done so far. And they won't send anything over on that. Our biggest problem is now that since we've stacked up so many medical bills, I've got insurance, but UAB is also out of network for my insurance. So we get caught with a lot of extra stuff. And one thing that's holding my transplant up now is that if we can't get the VA to say that they're going to pay for it, then UAB may not even perform the operation because the insurance, on paper, we don't have enough money to pay for what the insurance won't cover. So the VA not paying this could actually... Well, you know, the VA saying they're not going to do it because of the trachea bronchomalacia, from the administrative point of view, was just them saying, well, you know, we can't fix this problem, even though it can be fixed. Since we can't do it, we're not going to fix it. We're not going to send you to get it fixed. So basically, we're just going to try to make you comfortable until you die. And then UAB, now that they're saying they can fix it, they can't do it. Essentially, what's happened is the VA said that they can't fix it, so you just have to wait and die. And now they're saying that, well, you know, we're not going to pay for it, so you're just going to have to wait and die. And so it's kind of a bad situation all the way around.
And aren't your doctors, they're with UAB?
Yes, sir. The UAB doctors, all the... Yes, sir.
They're telling you that you need the transplant.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So these are issues that definitely...
Kind of a contradiction there. I mean, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. You got the VA saying no, but your own doctors who are examining you, who are at UAB, are saying you need it.
Right. Well, the good thing about it is the good Lord gave me a jackhammer when I was born, so we're going to beat it. I've got confidence in it. But yeah, it's a and I took actually I spoke with Mr. Corey's on it a little while back, and I've taken his advice, so I've got some congressional support and some support from the Alabama Secretary of State. We're going to have a meeting and. We're going to kind of discuss the route that we want to take with it because my goal is that I was initially going to go straight to the media with it after I was able to get everything with the transplant put behind me. But one of the biggest things that I've been afraid of is if I got over here and it got local and never to get national attention, they would fix the problem for me, but they tried to sweep it under the rug and it wouldn't help anybody else. And you know, if I end up going in the next 2 weeks, I want the ball rolling to fix it for everybody, and that's my objective right now. It's you know, if I end up having to go testify before Congress, then I'm going to do it because this whole thing has been built around their unwillingness to pay for a service-connected disability. And I'm 100% now, so that really shouldn't matter. But even before then, it's a 100% service-connected disability. There's no doubt that it came from it, and there's no doubt that it's what's going to kill me.
We've got to keep up the good fight, and outside of the show, we will continue working with you on that. But I appreciate, Michael, you taking the time to share with our national audience this issue because it shows an example where the VA is severely dropping the ball for a veteran.
Yes, sir.
it looks like it's just a matter of you know, bureaucracy and stalling and the money. And so got to keep fighting the good fight. And we really thank you for sharing with us and our listeners what you've been through. And certainly be wishing you all the best, you and your family all the best at this Christmas season.
Dan, congratulations again on getting your 100%. That's, you know, really awesome for you. And I know the last couple of months, and I've been talking to your wife, and the last couple of months were extremely stressful for you all. And hopefully this compensation will start to help things out around the house.
Oh, it's done more than starting to. Believe me, it's we greatly appreciate it, and I appreciate your help too, Mr. Corey, with the other. And I may end up calling you sometime soon on it.
Please,
I appreciate
do.
What y'all are doing for us. And I've got a couple of people I need to get y'all to talk to over the next week. And I'll be back in touch on that as well. But I appreciate y'all's time this evening.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care now, Michael. Bye-bye.
All the best.
All right, y'all.
Thank you.
Yeah, we got to stay on top of that one there, David.
Yeah.
Cause,
I'm glad he, the VA finally did the right thing as far as his disability compensation, but there's still a continuing battle, as he's described, to be fought on the healthcare side. And in his case, as he described, it's literally a matter of his life that is at stake, getting the necessary operations. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sad when, you know, you're sitting here talking to a veteran who served his country, and I see him on Facebook all the time, and with his oxygen, and he's really out there talking to people and talking to other veterans and trying to give everybody hope. But when he sits there and he tells you that it's going to kill him, and it may kill him sooner than later, that's very sad. And
I also applaud
sad that our VA and our government is letting it happen. Senator Shelby, let's go get something done up there in Alabama for this young man.
Yeah, well, I was also going to say I applaud Michael for his mindset of looking out for other veterans, because we've talked on prior shows about an issue that I know, you know, Michael is very familiar with, which is that of the harmful effects of the open burn pits that were used for many years in Iraq and Afghanistan. We've talked about it on a number of shows. We had Greg Love, the film director and producer of the Burn Pit documentary, which is now out and in theaters. It's an important issue, and we're going to continue to follow it. But we're our time is quickly moving along here tonight, Richard. Why don't we quickly summarize the last few of the bills that made it through Congress, were signed into law before we close tonight?
Well, we've got the H.R. 1329, Veterans Compensation COLA Act. That's another one of those acronyms. The Veterans Compensation Cost of Living Adjustment Act would increase the rates of compensation for veterans with service-connected disabilities, as well as the rates of dependency indemnity compensation for survivors of certain disabled veterans as of December 1st, 2017. The dollar amounts to be increased pursuant to subsection are the following. Wartime disability compensation under Section 1114 of Title 38. Additional compensation for dependents under Section 1115, subparagraph 1. Clothing allowance under Section 1162 and dependency indemnity compensation to children under Section 1313A and 1314. Each dollar amount shall be increased by the same percentage as the percentage by which benefit amounts payable under Title II of the Social Security Act, 42 U.S.C. 401, as increased effective December 1st, 2017. President Trump signed this into law on November 2nd, 2017. So that's some good news. Back to you, David.
Yeah, for those interested in what this cost of living adjustment translates into, go to va.gov. That's va.gov, and look for the current compensation tables to find out the specific dollar amounts. But again, we're kind of running out of time. Real quickly, another law passed by Congress was the Hire Vets Act, introduced by Representative Paul Cook It required the Department of Labor to establish a Hire Vets Medallion program to recognize companies for their efforts to employ veterans and thereby hopefully motivate companies, with a positive carrot approach to encourage them to hire veterans, help veterans make that transition from military life to civilian life. Richard, why don't you tell us about the another important, very important bill passed earlier this year, which was the VA Accountability and Whistleblower Act.
Yeah, the Department of Veterans Affairs Accountability and Whistleblower Protection Act 2017 would create a new streamlined and efficient process to remove, demote, or suspend any VA employee for poor performance or misconduct with a concrete shortened timeline while still protecting employees' due process rights and would provide them with the right to appeal the action. It would also provide expanded protections for whistleblowers and would specifically bar VA from using this removal authority if the employee has an open whistleblower complaint case with the Office of Special Counsel. The Office of Accountability and Whistleblower Protection, or the acronym is OAWP, is a newly created office within the Department of VA dedicated to improving the needs of veterans across the United States. OAWP provides investigative internal affairs services necessary to improve health benefits and cemetery needs for each and every veteran. Senator John Tester, Democrat from Montana, a co-sponsor of the bill, stated probably 99.9% of the people who work in the VA do a great job, and the veterans will tell you when they go into the VA clinics that they do a great job. But we have a few bad apples, no disrespect to the senator, but I believe this percentage of 99.9% is way off. I'm only one person representing hundreds of vets, and a lot more than one or two of my clients expressed discontent with the VA. In addition, the senator did not mention anything about the compensation side of the VA, where we still see countless mistakes and errors. Whether this rises to the level of warranting action by the OAWP, I think we better be a little cautious to express too many kudos upon the VA or our politicians in this regard. Fact is, the VA, by all accounts, is broken and dysfunctional. If the OAWP can start to help fix it and get rid of the dead weight in the VA, then great, but I will not hold my breath. Back to you, David.
Yes, and the 10th bill enacted into law was appropriations for the Veterans Choice Program, which was enacted earlier this year to provide an additional $2 billion continue the Veterans Choice Program for 6 months while Congress works on other reforms on the VA healthcare side. That's something that's still underway right now in Congress. And then finally, the 11th bill has been enacted by both houses, passed by both houses, and it's awaiting the president's signature. And that's Senate 1266, the Enhancing Veteran Care Act, is designed to authorize the VA to contract with some nonprofit organizations that accredit healthcare organizations in order to investigate VA medical centers to ensure they're providing quality care. Now, on that note, that's a quick summary of measures legislation in 2017. What we look in the next year is more attention to the implementation of the reforms of the VA appellate system, more attention to the burn pit issue, more attention to the Camp Lejeune contaminated drinking water issue, and possibly, I emphasize, further expansion of the Agent Orange presumptive list. Those are issues, among others, that we'll be tracking. So it's been a quick hour here on the Veterans News Hour. It's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening. Veterans News Hour here on VBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our show sponsors, including American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans of disability cases involving the VA. We'd also like to thank our producer here at VBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and thank our listeners for listening in every week. And we'd like to invite you to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our show website has our contact information, which is at bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. You can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows there for your listening benefit. So please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.